Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another very special episode of the Movies on the Brain podcast. Our first time in 2017 recording a movie review podcast. The Great Wall was not sufficient enough for us to do a joint podcast on. Nor was 50 Shades Darker or John Wick or Lego Batman, all of which have come out in the year 2017 but are not the highest grossing movie of 2017. That belongs to Split domestically
for the moment.
And then also there's that XXX Return of Xander Cage, which we did do a review podcast on. So this is not the first review podcast. I have my entire opening is now just scrapped. So anyway, where did we just come from, Chad?
We just came from watching the new, I guess, X-Men movie, if you want to call it, Wolverine, or no, it's called Logan.
Yeah. It is called Logan, production name Wolverine 3, because it's the third Wolverine solo movie.
I don't know how good of a thing that is, but yeah.
It is sufficiently better than X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Oh, yeah.
And it has no silver samurai in it. Although it does have his samurai sword in it. If you notice that. In his room. You see it for like a brief second. You see the samurai sword.
No, I didn't notice. Yeah. I'm glad I didn't. Because it was... I want to forget that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
So, Chad. What did you think overall? Set the scene for us. What was our attendance like tonight?
It's like...
More than the 30 people that were in XXX 3.
Yeah, it's what it's come to look like on the Thursday open night at 7 for everything outside of Star Wars. This is like a decent crowd. There's still...
The middle's completely full.
Yeah, but there's still seats around, so it's not sellout.
Like 200, 250 people.
Yeah, Star Wars is like completely packed, but this is good for... This is
Star Wars, you have to get your seats 2 hours in advance.
Yeah. It doesn't help that we have a freaking Stormtrooper battalion that takes up half the dang theater. But, you know.
They can afford their own private screening. We cannot afford our own private screening. No. They can afford their own.
No. But, no, it's a good crowd. So, and when we left, there was a line waiting to get into the 9 o'clock, or 10 o'clock showing, I guess.
Yes, and there was a whole bunch of people outside buying tickets.
Yeah. So it looks like it's gonna do well, and it's good because it deserves to.
Chad, this is a movie that's gonna make a lot of money, and it's a movie that does not have any kind of true sequel potential because Jackman's walking away.
Yes.
So very much walking away.
Wait, before we go into her, how far in the spoilers are we gonna go?
Oh, this is a full spoiler cast.
Okay.
This is in the title, spoiler cast.
All right. So if you've gotten to this point.
Please go and see Logan, spend your money, give Fox your money, label it non-Fantastic Four money, and go watch the movie, come back and listen to this podcast after that is over.
If you're still here right now, this
starting
is all
from
your fault.
Starting from here, any spoilers are your fault for hearing them.
We are clear, free and clear. No comments. We're clear. All right. Not that we won't spoil anything right now. Just want to get out the way. So, yeah, where are we going?
So the good, the bad, and the not so good, Chad. What is your good?
My good, I mean, the movie overall is good.
Oh, wait, before we do that.
Yes.
What did you think of the prologue?
I was amused. Again, the spoiler, so the prologue is we get 3 minutes of Deadpool being Deadpool. In which most of it is actually just a silhouette of Deadpool.
Changing in to the Superman music in the... In the
telephone booth. I was amused because it was funny. And it really is like a whole minute and a half of him just in the telephone booth. And that they kept it on that shot for that long and they made it still be entertaining. I say kudos to whoever directed that little spot.
And it's a tribute to Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. It looks like, you know, if people thought Deadpool was like a one-trick pony, looks like that pony hadn't gotten written out yet, so...
But Chad, what was the point of this little prologue?
to remind you that, hey, this guy is about to kick the bucket and go away. But we still got this guy right here, and, you know, he doesn't just kill people, he's also funny, too. So, let's not forget about him. He's coming back next year. This dude's going away. This dude's coming back. That's the best I got.
Coming soon, Chad. Not soon enough.
It's a stupid pun, but I'll allow it.
It's not a pun. It's the absolute truth. I mean, that is how Fox executives view it.
This is true. This is very true.
He's coming soon, not soon enough. Had to make a director change. Otherwise, we would have been full go for Valentine's Day weekend 2018.
We don't even have a release date for that sucker yet.
No, we don't.
They don't even know when they're shooting. They just said sometime over the summer. But it's happening.
Soon, Chad. Not soon enough.
Yeah. It'd have been nice if they had a cable by now to tag along with that.
But it screams to me of, hey, this is the one good thing that we have. Remember this? Look at this. See? See, he's around. He's coming. You know, don't forget about him. I know that we're doing these other things, supposedly. I mean, Gambit's going to get his own movie, you know. But, but I mean, we've got this guy right here. You liked him last Valentine's Day weekend. He was funny. He was cheeky with the Academy. Well, Please stay. Watch the Logan movie because, you know, we've got other things coming.
But no,
normally, Marvel waits till after the movie to remind you that something is coming.
Well, but that's exactly what it is. That everything you said is exactly right. They wanted big red lights to be like, here, don't forget. And, I mean, you've seen the movie. They can't really stick that at the end because it doesn't belong anywhere around that movie.
It belongs nowhere in here. The tones could not be any different.
Yeah, so that's why they stick it in the front. Be like, here, we'll give you this now, and then we'll roll the title cards and you can separate it in your mind. If it's at the end credits, we're conditioned through Marvel to be like, okay, these all flow together. And there ain't no flow to this.
So let's get back to your good, your bad, and your not so good. Okay. Starting with your good.
So overall, the entire movie is a very good movie.
Oscar caliber?
I don't know about that. There are good performances in there. I have heard people that have seen it mention Oscar stuff. I don't know about that.
Very, very, very hard for a movie to have a May or even a August release date, a September release date, and still be relevant enough to get pushed down the road. Now, we have more evidence of it lately. The three examples I can give right off the top of my head in the last 5 years: Moonrise Kingdom, May release, got a bunch of Oscar nominations. Grand Budapest Hotel, May release, April release actually, got Oscar nominations and wins. And of course, Mad Max Fury Road, May movie, got awards, not only nominations, but wins. So if you got the studio behind it and it wants to run with it as its Oscar movie, you can keep it relevant enough and in the conversation come September, October, November, when the real heavy hitters come out.
Yeah, I just don't know. I would put it in there.
I mean, for goodness sakes, I mean, looking at what's coming in 2017 from that perspective, right? You've got a new Joe Wright movie coming in The Darkest Hours. You've got a new Christopher Nolan movie with Dunkirk. You've got a new Paul Thomas Anderson movie with Daniel Day-Lewis in the lead.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
You know, you've got a bunch of really prominent, heavy-hitting directors. The Spotlight director is coming out with his follow-up. There's a lot of, like, movies that just fit the kind of thing that they're looking for. And to have all those come out and have Logan still be relevant would be a miracle of a marketing machine from a people who, outside of the Deadpool marketing campaign, have done nothing of substance.
I don't think it's gonna be there. I personally wouldn't put it there. But that doesn't mean it's not good.
I mean, people love Jackman. I mean, in the community. I mean, he's a great guy, affable guy. He's done musical numbers at the Academy Awards before. But I mean, it's going to be really hard to push this performance unless the studio gets behind it and decides this is the play they want to go with. I mean, Warner's, I think it's, Mad Max is Warner's, right?
Yes.
I mean, Warner's made that decision that this was the one that they wanted to push and did so to great effect.
But again, if I'm pushing a performance in there, isn't, again, while he was good, for like Oscar caliber stuff, I would probably push Patrick Stewart, maybe the little girl, but I wouldn't say Jackman.
So, but that's your good. Your good is
The movie overall and the performances, particularly the three Jackman, Patrick Stewart, and the little girl whose name I need to know, but
because she's gonna be in a X-23 movie directed by James Mangold Dunlop.
We'll get to that. That'll be in one of these other categories. But yeah, that's my good.
Okay. My good would also be the performances. I also like the score. The score and the music were really good. The needle drop choices were very interesting. In part for me because we didn't get cash till the end credits. Yeah. And some of those cash songs, When the Man Comes Around and Hurt, both of which were used in the marketing campaign for Logan, both fit at different points in the movie and aren't used. So I found that interesting. The needle drops, the score was really good. In the cinematography, especially with the, being a neo-Western, a lot of the cinematography, especially when they're in the on the borderland in the El Paso area, some of the desert shots and the landscape shots are really... really well done. And the neon lights and the bright lights of the beginning of the film also, I thought, really helped set you in that 2029 space, without being heavy-handed. And I didn't know that Chryslers were that tough.
Yeah, that thing took a beating and just kept on going.
So, and the other good thing for me would be, like, the R-ratedness of it. The first line of the movie is an F-bomb. I can't even count the number of F-bombs that get dropped.
Oh, that's a lot.
I can't count the number of people who die. The body count's substantially high, starting with the three Mexicans who were trying to carjack him.
5 minutes in, and their body's dropping.
Right. The boobs. I mean, we actually... So we got swearing, we got blood, and we got booze.
Yeah.
Boobs. Yeah, and booze.
Lots of booze.
So, I mean, like, it's R-rated in the same way Deadpool's R-rated, but they couldn't be two more different R-rated.
Yeah, but I've been the one that says, it's a Wolverine movie, you don't have to make it rated R to make it what people think of Wolverine. But this story... there's no way you tell this story and it not be rated R.
And I know they took a pay cut on the front end. I guarantee you he's making all that up on the
back end. Oh, yeah. His last one, they're going to make it up to him. And it's going to be good to him this time. It's probably going to... the way X-Men movies go, it's probably going to be the highest
opening week, second highest opening weekend probably to Deadpool.
What did Deadpool do? I think Deadpool did like one...
I wanted to say it was 60.
Yeah, I think it was 160.
I mean, it surpassed everybody's expectations for a Valentine's Day weekend.
Yeah, this one is the projections I saw, I think it had it at 170, 175. So it'll beat Deadpool on opening weekend. I don't know how it's going to do over the long haul. I don't think it'll pass Deadpool, but...
well, it's in a situation where there's more coming down the line. Yeah. We've talked on this podcast for almost a solid year about how tough... February and, more so now, March are. I mean, you're talking about Kong Skull Island. You're talking about Power Rangers. You're talking about Chips. You're talking about, and of course, the monster of Beauty and the Beast, which is, again, going to track for another $100+ million opening.
I love how you keep just slipping Chips in there.
Well, there was a big standee in front of the entrance to the auditorium.
Again, if I didn't talk to you, I would forget that movie's coming. Even with that big standee, I would look at him like, oh, go in the movie and forget. Just done.
They are running advertisements on television and bought ad time during March Madness, so.
See, I don't watch that. And I know they have ads on wrestling, but when I watch wrestling, I fast forward through the commercials. I think I get nothing on chips.
Hey, Dax Shepard wanted to make a chips movie. He's made it, and by God, now he's going to try and make money.
Good on him. He's not going to do that last part.
So, I mean, we've talked on this podcast a lot that, like, there's not a lot of room to breathe here. I mean, Kong Skull Island is next weekend, along with Chips, I think.
I think Chips is next weekend, too.
But, I mean, it's not a lot of room to grow there.
No, I mean, like, looking at it, it's probably going to be number two next weekend. The following
week, I would actually say Logan holds first place for 2 weeks, this week and next week, and then Beauty and the Beast comes in and just devours everything for the rest of the month.
You think it beats Kong?
Yeah, because I feel no, as although I'm super excited about Kong Skull Island and have been since they debuted that footage at Comic-Con last July, I can see and hear no buzz on the internet anywhere about fans being juiced or excited or pre-sales or tracking or any of that. So I could very easily see Kong Skull Island going the way of the first Godzilla movie from May of 2015, where it's just like, it's gonna do good box office.
Well, see, if let's say Logan does do 170, that means it's probably gonna do
a 50% drop, or
it'll probably be closer to 60. But to make the math easier on myself, we'll say once. I mean, we'll say 50, so that puts it at one. What's half of that? I should know this. It's like, I'm dying. I am dying. I'm blanking completely on this. I do math better than this. Not much, but a little better. About 85.
Yeah.
85. Ooh, yeah. If it's 85, yeah, Kong ain't beating that.
Yeah.
So I
expect Kong to conk out at somewhere around $35 to $45 million opening weekend.
Man, it means better than that.
I mean, not really, depending on what the budget is. Everything is dictated by what your budget is. I mean, you know you're going to have to make double, either domestic or international, you're going to have to make double in order to turn a profit. So, you know, opening weekend and success is measured by how much of a percentage you end up making of what your budget was. So, like, if you have a $120 million budget and you do $90 million opening weekend, you're in good shape.
Yeah.
But if you have a $120 million budget and you do $10 million on opening weekend domestically, I mean, you've got a whole lot steeper hill to climb.
Let's see. Does it have... Of course, they don't have the budget up there. Let's see if I can find it real quick. It just seems to... Everything you're saying is right. It just seems to me like they would need more. Particularly because the next three, hell, going all the way through March.
But the benefit that you have is that it's counter-programming for Beauty and the Beast. Like, the kids can go see Power Rangers, the adults can go see Kong Skull Island, and the girls can all go see Beauty and the Beast for a third or fourth time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it will have an audience if it's good, and let's not forget, Blake Lively is in the movie. I mean, not Blake Lively.
Is that Brie
Larson? Brie Larson, yeah.
It's $190 million.
So, if the budget's $190 million, which how that ballooned up that high, I have no idea, except for maybe that the production of a giant ape is not cheap.
And just from the reaction I saw, they say... Kong is, it's only Frosty that I saw. And he's like, Kong is the star of the movie, which makes me think he's on screen a lot, which would make this a lot more expensive.
But actually, if you technically think about it, Godzilla's the star of the Godzilla movie, and he's not on screen for very long.
Yeah, but I think when he
says... They play peekaboo with him.
I don't think there's a whole lot of in the trailer we just saw, there's more Godzilla in that trailer.
There's more King Kong in that country.
I mean, Hulk, more Kong in that trailer we saw than Godzilla in all of that other movie.
So if it's a $190 million budget, you got to make it in the 80s to...
See, that's what I think you need to make. Because when you make the bulk of your money your first weekend, you need to make like half of that.
I mean, we're playing summertime math here now. We're not talking your average springtime math.
This is true.
I mean, the calendar has shifted so greatly that, you know, with a packed March like this.
Well, if it can stay in the top five through April, it will be all right. Yeah. It's just going to be tough to do that.
So, Chad, what is your not so good?
So, my not so good. My not so good has like almost nothing to do with the movie itself. It has to do with like I said, the movie's good. It has to do with me reconciling what the movie Wolverine as opposed to the Wolverine I know. And this has been the theme through all of the X-Men comics. It's like, you know, they're like X-Men, almost a name only. And while Hugh Jackman has been Wolverine for 17 years and people love him and he's good at what he does, he's not necessarily what Wolverine is to me. And seeing it on this movie, I can separate that, but at the end of the day, when we're watching, again, spoilers, if you're here, it's your fault. We're watching Wolverine die. It's like that whole little scene, there's glimpses of what I think of as Wolverine, but it's not like the whole thing. But that's just a product of where we're at with the movie. So yeah. That's like my issue and not so much the movie issue.
Well, see, I'm at that place where I take this is the Wolverine from the movies, and this is the Wolverine that 99% of the movie-going public knows. Yeah. So that moment is going to be, like it was for me, very emotional, very moving, very touching, and it's going to have a lot of resonance and impact. That is completely different from the Wolverine that is in the X-Men comics, but, you know, Downey is a version of the Iron Man that's in the comics, just dialed to 11. You know, Chris Evans has characteristics of the Captain America from the comics, but doesn't have all of them. You know, it's an interpretation of the character. And so I'm fine with it. I can separate the two. My not-so-good is a couple of things. One, where is the federal government? Okay, there are functioning cities. Like, this isn't a dystopian America here. There are functioning cities that are shown to us. So this isn't like a completely disjoint society where, like, you know, the Sentinels have taken over and there's lawlessness and hellish landscapes all about and, you know, the Walking Dead are running around. This seems to be a normally functioning America with the exception of, you know, small children trying to make their way from Mexico to Canada because they're being prosecuted, you know, kidnapped and tortured.
So, keep going, because all that feeds into my...
Okay, so that's a problem that I have with that's a not so good. The other not so good for me would be your villains. What was the purpose of that post-credit singer for Days of Future Past, for Apocalypse?
Again, all goes into another thing. But
what was the point of Mr. Sinister? Because they didn't use Mr. Sinister. They used Stryker's kid, right?
He's not Stryker's kid. He's like in X-Men 2 when Wolverine pops up and he kills all the doctors in the room. One of those doctors.
Okay.
So, and as you said, yeah, Sinister would have fit right there because of what Sinister does and by nature what this guy did. I didn't even think about it until you said it, but yes, that's a perfect good waste. That's a way you could have tied things in and you chose not to. And there's a whole lot of choosing not to.
And we'll get to that. But those would be my not-so-good things. And the other not-so-good for me is the fact that, you know, this crazy, demented Alzheimer's Professor Xavier. While it is a lot of fun to hear Patrick Stewart just curse and...
And he, Yeah, he lets him go.
And he lets him go, just like he does in Green Room. But you don't understand how it works. So you know that he's telekinetic, and he has these seizures, which are in part controlled by medication. But when he has a spasm, and he gives everybody partial paralysis, except for the two people with animanium in their body, you don't really understand what's going on or how it's affecting the other people in the normal people in the room. And I think that was kind of a weird thing to have happen, because it doesn't just happen once, it happens multiple times.
Yeah. I'm looking up Caliban. You said something that made me think of that, because I think he's in one of these other movies, and I just want to make sure. Because, you know, they do this thing where they don't explain anything. Which leads into, like, my, what do we call that last category? I just want to call this...
The bad.
Oh, just the pure bad? Because this is, like, a steaming pile kind of bad. Because it ties in everything you said. Like, the problem with the X-Men franchise as a whole is that they're just like, we don't care how anything goes together. And, you know, that's fine. If they want to use the characters and have, like...
It was fine back in 2000.
The first three, they were like, okay, these are all connected. This is how we're going. They're all directly sequels. You get First Class, and, like, this is a prequel. It all still fits together. Then they do Days of Future Past, and they're like, you know what? To hell with it all. We're just going to blow it all up.
That movie we just made 10 months ago? Forget it. Yeah, Never happened.
Yeah, because caught in the wake of Days of Future Past is the Wolverine, which they go ahead and butcher the Wolverine by having that... Well, I mean, they butchered it regularly, but the end scene is supposed to lead into Days of Future Past, and they really have, like... The end scene takes place right after the Wolverine. Days of Future Past takes place, like, 15 years later. So they really have nothing to do with each other. But that would be the theme. They don't care.
Now I will defend them on that, because they have the television screen talking about the Sentinels in that... In Bolivar's Trask company, and the preview for the Sentinels coming and all of that in that post-credit stinger, in the airport where they meet.
But at least
you're saying that, hey, this is... They go to find Wolverine because they know this thing is coming, and they write it out together.
I mean, I can... If you want to defend it, you can, because they just go get him, and, you know, the Sentinels came, and they did evolve and all this stuff.
And not only that, but they advertise them. Like, there's an advertisement on TV which talks about them. Now, the problem I have with that is, continuity-wise, Bolivar Trask is trying to pitch the Sentinels to the Defense Department in 1970-whatever. And they go to get Logan from the airport in 2015.
Yeah.
So, and by 2024 or 2021 or whatever date the future part of Days of Future Past was, it's a hellish landscape. There is no government, and the Sentinels have taken over, and there's, you know, a few X-Men left holed up in something that looks like an Aztec temple.
Okay, so at the end of Days of Future Past, where do we end up?
We end up with healthy, normal Xavier rolling up to Jackman saying, we've got a whole bunch of new history to teach you.
Okay.
Because the only person, as we've explained on this podcast many, many times, the only person who remembers the continuity in order, the way that we viewed it from the year 2000 to the year 2014, was Logan.
So, do you know when this movie is supposed to take place?
2029.
I don't even think it's that
far. Yes, they say it repeatedly. They say it repeatedly in the movie, 2029.
So it's 10 years. It's 10 years from Days of Future Past till this. So they never explain what happens in that time between these two movies. Like, I understand that this is a separate story and all this stuff, but they hint at stuff. You could just say it. Like, they hint at the fact that Xavier killed all the X-Men. You can just say that. They hint at Wolverine's body breaking down, but...
Now, see, they don't... They don't hint Xavier killing all the X-Men. They hint at this doctor guy hunting them down and taking them all out.
Well, there's a point in
they were all together, and Charles had a
When they're in the car, and when Charles is starting to get his wits about him, they've said stuff before, but in that point he's like, "This happened in Westchester, and this is something." And then Logan like cuts him off to allude that he had one of these things.
And on the radio.
Yeah, they say it's just like what happened to Westchester,
which left so many dead.
Yeah,
like so and so injured, so and so dead.
Yeah, so it alludes to the fact that Charles had one of these seizures, and some of, if not all of the X-Men that were around died, except for Wolverine. But they don't explicitly say that. But
that's crazy because again, they also say at one point in the movie that no new mutants have been born in the last 25 years.
Uh-huh.
Which would mean all the way back to the beginning of the first movie.
Mm-hmm. So, when we meet the X-Men in the first one, from that point, like, all the mutants that we're going to get have been born by that point. And we don't get any more. Even though we still...
And then the crazy, insane part of this movie is the fact that the Doctor guy's plan is this energy drink company that is kind of hinted at throughout the entire film. Like, you see the advertisements on the TV, you see the cornfields, you have the African-American couple who's nice and takes them into their home. You have that whole story right there on the prairie land and all that about the corn.
Yeah.
His whole thing is, we're putting stuff into these energy drinks to spark a evolution in people and create mutants that way. We're not just doing it through X-25. We're not just doing it through X-24. We're not just doing it through X-23. We're not just doing it through these 24 kids we have in a lab in Mexico. We're doing it through these energy drinks. With nothing ever comes of it.
No. Again, it... So, if... That just makes me think, why did the mutants just stop becoming... Why did they just stop having mutants? They just don't explain a whole lot of that backstory stuff.
No, they don't explain any of it. And, like, when he gives his big evil speech, his villain speech at the end, he's like, we learned, instead of trying to eliminate them, we need to control them. And, but again, if you're randomly creating new mutants through the energy drink...
How are you controlling them?
Right.
Yeah. You have more chance of controlling them like you did when you made the little clone mutants.
But even there, the little Mexican woman, you know, again, when the lab assistant, she says, they realized that they needed to make something without a soul. Hence the reason why...
They made X-24,
because they realized these kids were committing suicide because they didn't want to fight. They didn't want to be weapons.
I mean, that was like the most fleshed out thing they did. But that would be that.
Yeah, that exposition scene with the iPhone videotape is the most exposition and backstory that you really get.
Yeah,
and it's necessary because it sets up the entirety of who X-23 is.
So, but it's just everything that they just kind of leave there.
And I'm just confused because it's like, okay, how did they get his DNA profile? Did they get his DNA profile from Stryker? From Stryker's medical stuff when he was doing his deal back in the 60s or 70s or whenever the hell he was fished out of the Potomac or whatever? Mm-hmm. Or was it from that blood that Sinister got in the post-credit sequence for Apocalypse? And if Sinister had it, then who the hell is this guy? How did he get a hold to it?
Yep. I would, just to formulate a theory, I would assume that it's genetic stuff they had from Stryker, since they did it. The card he gives him says Alkali, whatever. And I think it's all part of the same thing.
Well, and then, of course, you got Kelly Hughes' character, who at some point had gone through that process.
Mm-hmm. So, It's just all that kind of stuff. And then we got even though particularly want to erase X3 and Wolverine's origin, we got that callback to the stupid bullet from X-Men Origins, that the amnesia animadium bullet that came back. And so we watched X-Men Origins,
and as soon as that bullet popped up, I knew what was going to happen.
Yeah.
I knew that this was going to be the thing that was going to be the MacGuffin of the entire film.
And so in Origins, the whole thing was he got shot with it. He got shot point blank in the head. And it didn't kill him. It just shot him in the head and it just boinked off, but he got amnesia. In this one, Berserker X-24, she shoots him in the back of the head and blows off a chunk of his face.
And that's enough.
But it already shot Wolverine in the head, closer than this one got shot, and it just hit him in the forehead, knocked him back, and he lost his memory.
But he wasn't designed the same way X-24 was.
They both got adamantium. It shouldn't work. Unless he only has adamantium claws and not the rest of them, which is something they should have said, so I won't ask these kind of questions.
But again, the fact that we've sat here for 10 or 15 minutes going through all of these mental gymnastics of the story goes to serve a larger point. We talked on our podcast last week about the fate of the Fantastic Four and where we are in life and all of that with the Fantastic Four. And we talked about the future of the X-Men going forward and all of that. One of the problems the X-Men universe has is that they have Kinberg, and that's it. And Kinberg isn't a guy who's all that concerned with how all these pieces fit together. Back in 2000, you could do crazy stuff like this where it doesn't matter. Like I told you earlier, it feels literally at times like Mangold is like, I'm going to make my Wolverine movie. I don't care about no cinematic universe. I don't care about no continuity. I don't care about no plan. I'm going to tell the best Wolverine story I can and be in service of Hugh Jackman's goodbye. And so what you end up with is a film that, unlike Marvel or even DC, it doesn't feel like there's anybody in the Fox camp who is looking at these scripts, who is looking at these storyboards, and putting them up on the wall and saying, how do all these pieces fit? What is the backstory? How does this work? How does that work? Because you know what? That's what Kevin Feige does. Going all the way back to the freaking first Iron Man, where it was him and Favreau and Downey sitting in a tent writing out, as they went, the Iron Man movie, putting it together. Because they put all the pieces in place and they knew they had a hope of where they were going to go with that post-credit sequence and what that might lead to down the line. He knew how all these pieces fit. He knew where the backstory was going to come from, all of that. They don't have that guy. And they don't have that commitment to continuity. They don't have that commitment to connective tissue. And now it's gotten them in a bind. You can do that. If you were Chris Nolan and you want to make your Batman trilogy and you want to tell one, and Warner Brothers comes to you and says, we want you to do Justice League, and you tell them no, and they come to you and they say, we want you to be the godfather of our cinematic universe, we want you to put us together a cinematic universe to rival Marvel's, and you tell them no, then guess what? You get the right to make the final Batman movie that you want to make. And if you want to have Bruce Wayne fly in the Batwing, a bomb out into the middle of Gotham River, and have him blow up into a million pieces and have a funeral for him in a cemetery and a statue and all the rest of it, you can do that. Because your film doesn't have to connect to anything. You are truly making a standalone Batman trilogy. That is a standalone Batman trilogy. Something that something that Burton didn't get a chance to do, and something that, thank God, Schumacher never got to do. So, but the problem is, that leaves you with having to put all the pieces together later. And that's where Zach came in. Zach was going to have to, he did a Superman movie with a Wayne Enterprises satellite floating around somewhere, and then he was like, 2 months before the movie comes out, talking to Ben Affleck about being Batman and putting Batman in the next movie and trying to set everything up for Justice League. The problem when you do standalone, I'm going to make my movies, is that when you want to get to the business of making a shared cinematic universe, you're behind. The problem that Fox now has is their most profitable franchise is Deadpool. The reason there was that prologue tonight was to remind people that there is another Deadpool movie coming. The problem that you have, we said this movie is, I think they said at some point, 2028 or 2029.
Mm-hmm.
The original X-Men was set in present day of 2000, 1999-2000.
Mm-hmm.
Days of Future Past is set in 2021, I think. The future part of Days of Future Past is like 2019 through 2021, somewhere around there. Deadpool is set present day February of 2016. So now you've got a situation where all of your future, all of your X-Men that are currently still living are in 1980 something after Apocalypse. All of your future X-Men, X-23 and her little band of merry men, they're in Canada in 2029. And Deadpool is just sitting there waiting to go on his next adventure with Cable, and he's the most viable, he's the most popular, he's the bankable moneymaker, and he's stuck in 2016.
Yep.
So you can't have X-23 in your Deadpool movie. You can't have Jean Grey and Cyclops and Storm and Quicksilver and Nightcrawler in your Deadpool movie because they're 30 years apart. So you're left in this hole where now, yay, Mangold's made his two standalone Wolverine movies, and yay, Singer is off to do 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and doesn't want to touch X-Men again, and Josh Boone's out there making a New Mutants movie, which fits where, I don't know. And then you've got Ken Berg wanting to not only produce, but also direct a Dark Phoenix movie, a Supernova movie, which fits in the 90s, the 2000s. Like, where does this fit? So, by virtue of them allowing filmmakers to make their own standalone movies, and by virtue of their in-continuity trilogies, both the Singer trilogies, and you know the first trilogy from X1, 2, and 3, and then First Class, Days of Future Past, and Apocalypse, the last two of those, the last one has suffered majorly.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in this position of where now the Deadpool cinematic universe, but what other characters are you going to bring in, and how is that going to work, and how fast can you streamline that? I mean, I know you want to do Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2, X-Force. Do you want to do Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2, Deadpool 3, then X-Force? I mean, and again, where does New Mutants fit in? Where does Supernova fit in? I mean, they've hindered themselves majorly by allowing these kinds of movies, which I'm very thankful for. Mangold making his own movie is a great thing.
Uh-huh.
But at some point, you have to decide, do we want to do the Marvel thing, Marvel Studios thing? Do we want to do the DC thing? Do we want to do a cinematic, an X-Men universe in the truest sense, like in a continual sense? Or do we just want to make independent, standalone X-Men movies that don't care about continuity and have no connective tissue whatsoever? And I know that's a long rant.
Yeah, it was. I'm not going to add too much to it outside to say that they could have made this movie and still made it like it.
The Sinister thing was the easiest play in the world because it was there in the post-credit sequence for Apocalypse. The doctor guy that they didn't have in this movie serves the same function as Sinister.
Yes, he does.
So you could have just done that. It ties in. It makes people feel like that post-credit sequence on Apocalypse means something. It's something they can easily pick up and follow. Again, they would have then had his DNA from the 80s onward. But, I mean, it just, it doesn't feel like Fox cares about continuity, about backstory, about connective tissue, about linear storytelling, any of it.
Well, they don't. And they haven't had to. Like, they could have made this movie and put all their little threads that are just, that you can see, that they could have just tagged there, and it wouldn't have cost anything extra, and it could have connected to everything that happened before.
But there's the problem. There's no one looking at all those loose ends and saying, this is how we tie them up.
There's nobody specifically looking at it, but I know that, I mean, Mango has been around this property now for, what, two movies, so probably about 6-7 years. He knows those things are there. And
Samurai sword in the room.
Yeah, by... Yeah, him.
The bullet. The animation bullet.
If I wanted to give him the samurai sword, because it's from his movie, the bullet is from Origins. And then they reference things that are from other movies, but just ever so slightly. Just
connect the threads. Easter egg light.
Yeah. Just connect the threads. You don't even have to do big things. Like, I mean, flesh out your story from saying, I mean, you've said it in this date and given enough time for Professor X to lose his mind and kill the X-Men. Just say it. And then connect the put Sinister in the movie and then do those little things and it feels fleshed out and you've still made the movie you want to make.
How do you feel about the X-Men comics being a part of the continuity now?
I don't like it. Only strictly because he put it in there just so Hugh Jackman can say, I would never wear the stupid spandex.
Which he did, which you have the joke from the original movie about what would you prefer, yellow spandex?
Yeah. I mean, you don't have to keep...
That joke's been made before. Yeah, I mean,
you don't have to keep... There are fans that want to see the costume. There's a lot of people that think it doesn't work. You've made this universe where they don't wear them.
Came close to doing the orange and brown one.
Yeah, he gave that little nod in the Wolverine, a scene that never made it into the actual movie. There's no need to keep, like, poking at you. You know you're going to piss off some people, but you just want to say it again. You don't have to. We know.
See, I think his intent there was different. I think his intent with putting the comic book in there was to say, this is the comic that I'm drawing from, A. And B, I think it was to simply show a foreshadowing in giving Logan a reason not to go to South Dakota. Because Logan sees the comic, he sees that the coordinates are the same, and he sees what that comic depicts. That comic depicts the death of Wolverine. And so by putting that there and Logan reading the comic and seeing it, it gives him an extra reason not to go because it's like, well, I know what's awaiting me there. I don't want to go. Not because it's all in her head and it's a fantasy land or whatever. I don't want to go because if I go there, I will die.
Just the way he builds up until the end, it seems like he wants to go out and die. So I don't think him seeing it in the comic would deter him. I think it really is the... throughout the movie, they portray him as being, you know, gruff and trying to distance himself from people, but he still does care. And if he takes her to North Dakota from this thing that the nurse made up and it's not there, the little girl's going to be crushed. And he knows he's dying, so it's like, well, we went all this way, there's nothing there, she's dejected, and if these people come, I'm about to die. I can't really do much for it. So... There is a reason for him to have the comics there. He also put in that, he also specifically referenced that costume, just so he can say that again. Because Mango has said verbatim what he made Logan say in the movie about stupid costumes.
Well, and the other part of it, too, is what I like is it does kind of infer that the X-Men were a thing. That they, that this aura and legend built up around them and that they became the stories of myth.
Yeah.
And that people eventually make comic books about them because, like he says, you know, it didn't happen this way. You know, they took a some little small part of it, of the story, and they made it a lot bigger, but, like, it didn't happen this way.
Yeah, and it's they're not the first movie to do that. Actually, most of the comic book movies, if there ever is a kid, the kids are either, the kids are dressed like the heroes, or they do have the toys, or the comics, so it's a popular thing
to Tales do. To Astonish.
Yeah, and, like, the last Amazing Spider-Man had the kid dressed like Spider-Man. I forget what it was, but I know I've seen other movies where the kids have, like, toys of the hero. So, that in itself doesn't bother me. It was specifically...
to do the same joke he did 20 years ago.
And see, it wasn't even a joke, because when I was watching the movie and Wolverine said those lines, I'm like, that is verbatim what James Mangold said about putting Wolverine in the costume.
Well, I mean, we did get our 8 seconds of the X-Men in, from 1980 in their costumes.
Yeah, but, I mean, does that even count now, you know?
So let's talk about where this movie leads to.
I mean, logistically, where it leads to is a...
is Wolverine 6 feet under, Charles Xavier 6 feet under, and an X above a grave.
So... to me, at least, right to a brick wall. Because, yes, you do have X-23, but...
And her band of merry mutants.
But as you said, this movie takes place so far into the future...
2029.
The world they've established, there are only a handful of mutants. Again, it appears the United States is not a safe haven for mutants. You go there, they're going to kill you for whatever reason, they never say. Canada and Mexico seem to be the place. And Mexico's not all that cool because they make... they make you there.
They allow you to be.
Yeah. So it seems like Canada is the spot. I don't know. And I don't know why these people that are working out of Mexico and seem to be mercenaries and above the law. They went through the United States and rushed out everything. Or just going to magically stop at the border. But let's pretend that they do. What am I going to do watching, okay, 15 10-year-old mutants with nothing else to do?
Chad, wasn't Alkaline Lake actually in Canada in the mythology of the original Singer trilogy?
Yes.
So, if Alkaline Lake is in Canada, how can Canada be a safe haven?
It's not, but we're not supposed to think that hard. So, yeah. But to the original question, you have this character that I would like to see continue to develop in X-23.
And Mangold has said his next project, one of his next projects, is an X-23 movie.
Well, and it works because it's a way of replacing Wolverine without actually having to replace Wolverine. However, I think she would be best served being around all the rest of your characters who are 20 years before her. So...
well, X-Men Apocalypse ends in 1982 or 83, 84, something like that.
So we're like pushing 40 years.
And this is 2029.
Yeah, we're pushing 40 years apart.
Try 50. Let's just say it was 1985. 1985 to 2030 or 2029.
Yeah. So she's stuck up there without anything to do. Yeah, Mango can make the movie, but... I mean, and if this is any indication, it'll probably be good, but she's wasted by not being around the rest of the X-Men.
But there's a girl you could ride a few movies out of.
Yeah. Now, they can go the convoluted route, in which they have a time traveler showing up in Deadpool.
Cable.
And you can do that kind of stupid stuff. I mean, because Cable's supposed to be living in the future. You would assume it'd be...
right, but at the same time, like, Deadpool is your most... fourth wall, self-referential, non-serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I mean, I heard all the little commentaries and jokes about, oh, well, Deadpool will just magically say reboot and automatically we'll have a completely rebooted canon. I mean, but in actuality, I don't think you can pull that off, especially if Singer's doing Kinberg's doing Supernova this year and Boone's already up in Canada filming New Mutants. Unless you want to just roll with Logan was the only one who remembered our canon from the way it was. So now you're just going to pick up with X-23 and you're going to run with that canon from that point in 2029 onward. And so you'll have the Supernova set movie in the 90s, you'll have Deadpool in the present day, and you'll have X-23 movies set in the future. And just say it's one big timeline, but you got three separate pieces of it going on.
You could. I just don't think it's the smartest other thing they should do. But if they want to do it,
the smartest thing they can do is continue to develop the Deadpool universe. Whether it's with Deadpool 1, 2, and 3 and X-Force, or whether it's with Deadpool 1, Deadpool 2, and X-Force, there's your moneymaker. I mean, there's a reason they did that prologue tonight.
I mean, they're going to do that. Everything else.
I personally think you should drop the X-Men, like the Kinberg movie, Supernova. Let things rest with Apocalypse, and just focus on X-23 in the future and Deadpool in the present, and neither the two shall meet, and let that be the thing.
I would agree with that, but they're not going to let the New Mutants die. Even though they kind of should, because they're...
New Mutants can fit anywhere in this continuity.
They should be able to.
Yeah, I mean, McAvoy's talked about the fact that there's a possibility that he would reprise the Xavier role for New Mutants, which would put it in that 80s, 90s time frame of Supernova.
Yeah.
And there's always a possibility Sophie Turner could cameo as Jean Grey and start plugging us along the route to a Supernova movie.
This is the kind of loose stuff for you, Fox.
Overall, was it a good send-off for Jackman?
I think it was. I mean, every time he's done one of these X-Men movies, like, we're going to finally do Wolverine, cutting loose and doing all the things we want him to see, and then we get Origins, and it's like, no, you didn't. I don't know what this is, but that ain't it. And he comes back for the Wolverine and says the same thing. And we get three-fourths of the way. He's like, you're on the right track. And then you're like, no, this is a cliff. And you just went over it.
Literally.
Yeah, literally. And then we get this one. And it seems like he got it. So I think it is a good send-off for him.
Why would the Animanium have been poisoning his blood?
You asked too many questions. Because I got nothing. He's had it all this time.
It's not like the arc reactor. The arc reactor is a piece of equipment that once it starts leaking, leaks into your bloodstream and poisons you.
Yeah, the adamantium, it shouldn't break down. So he should.
I mean, if your blood vessels start leaking, they just...
In my mind, it works that, you know, the adamantium is breaking down and like giving him some type of metal poisoning. However, right. Adamantium is indestructible. It doesn't break down. So he shouldn't have to worry about that. Plus,
now, if you wanted to say that the alcoholism was killing him, like his liver was dying, you know, that kind of a thing I could get with. But again, immortal, so...
Yeah, I don't know if they say it in the movies, but, I mean, he drinks so much because it doesn't affect him. It takes more for him to get drunk, and he heals. So it's not like nothing can happen. He can get drunk. It just takes him a very long time.
I mean, I get it that the adamantium poisoning is a means to have him be less, you know, not heal as fast and all of that.
Yeah.
And we get the HGH moment where he pumps himself full of steroids for about 5.5 seconds.
Yeah, but, I mean, I get it. I get it for those reasons. It just doesn't make sense from...
Again, a storytelling standpoint, like a plot standpoint.
Yeah.
Because there is no Kevin Feige over there. There's no one overseeing continuity. There's no one overseeing storytelling. There's no one saying, okay, well, James, I like your story, but here are some very ginger things that you can do that aren't going to overwhelm your story, but will just even make it feel more connected to your trilogy of Wolverine movies. Mm-hmm. That won't, again, won't overpower everything, but will make fans feel, you know, rewarded for watching all of your movies.
Yeah. My last little sort of nitpick. I looked up Caliban, and we've seen Caliban in this movie. Caliban wasn't another X-Men movie. Want to guess which one?
The Wolverine Origins?
No. Caliban was in X-Men Apocalypse. The dude that was, you meet Psylocke, the guy that she worked for, that's Caliban. Completely different than the Caliban we just got. But this is the kind of stuff they say, hey, F it, let's go. Yeah.
The Caliban that exists in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And is freeing mutants from helping them change their papers and helping them find new homes and escape persecution.
Mm-hmm.
This guy's a mutant tracker. Can mm-hmm. sniff things and point you in the right direction and is allergic to the sun.
Mm-hmm. And that's the one that's more accurate to the comics, by the way. Yeah.
Again, if Kinberg's supposed to be the guy overseeing the continuity and all of that, he's failing at his job severely.
He is, but I really think the way Fox is set up and the way they have these rights where they basically got them for nothing, they like take them for, they take advantage, they take them for granted and are just like, at least two out of three of these is going to kill it and make a lot of money. So, yeah, screw the rest.
But now Jackman's gone. He can't come back. Now you're forced to, you know, make an X-23 movie and hope people have attached themselves to the character enough. And, you know, Deadpool's going to be a success. But Kinberg's never directed a movie. Now you're going to give him a space X-Men in space budget.
If they do that, they are insane.
Well, point proven. All right, Chad, so as we've wandered off on this podcast, we've talked about Kong Skull Island, we've talked about the box office potential. What's your number for the weekend?
For Logan?
Yeah. Where does it win the weekend at? And where does it set the bar? Because you know that bar is going to get shattered by Beauty and the Beast 2 weekends from now.
Okay, so I'm going to set the bar. I'll go at 170. I'll stay low.
Yeah, I'll go with 165. I'll go $5 million less.
I mean, right now, I've heard tracking for Logan and her tracking for Beauty and the Beast. Logan is kicking Beauty and the Beast's butt.
But I feel like that's Disney being super conservative with their estimations.
I think it is, but
at 120 million.
Yeah, but the difference is Logan's tracking came out with Logan already getting reviews and good word of mouth. I'm interested to see what word of mouth is.
Well, it's the 17th, right?
Mm-hmm. The premiere, I think there's a premiere tonight.
So the embargo should lift eventually.
Well, that they're screening it so early is normally a good sign. I just don't know when the embargo lifts. But I think it'll be good word of mouth. I don't know if it's going to be. Logan's like 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't know if it's going to get that kind of word of mouth. And as I have a separate exercise going on right now on Facebook. People of a certain age hold their nostalgic values very close. And if you change even a little bit, they don't really like it that much.
So people having problems with three new songs?
It's not even the three new songs. Like, it's specifically been
the designs.
I haven't heard that much about designs. I'm not too fond of designs, but I can live. I'm not as judgmental as some people. Surprise, surprise. They released two clips. One of Emma Watson singing Belle
and walking through the town,
and the other one is
Gaston.
And people have not, particularly the Belle one, they have not liked her singing or whatever. But it didn't give all the, like, I saw it and I was like, take my money. And other people saw it, I was like, that's not my beauty. That's not my Belle. Gaston, I haven't heard as much about, but that Belle thing. So, nostalgia may come to bite them in the butt. I don't know. I think after they see the whole movie, they might change their tune, but
I'm gonna, like I said, I'll go with 165 for Logan, and definitely wins the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where we stand after that. I mean, as far as I know, New Mutants doesn't have a release date.
No.
Deadpool 2 doesn't have a release date.
Nothing else coming up has a release date.
And Supernova doesn't have a release date. So there's no... And Gambit's been pulled from the schedule, so...
I mean, they have dates on the schedule, but nothing...
Untitled Fox Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, also, shout out to the Fox for being a little petty with their opening Marvel thing. Since everybody but them gets a Marvel Studios banner now with a nice fanfare, Fox is like, screw y'all, we're taking everybody out except for the X-Men on this little flipping page thing. So I laughed at that. I was like, okay, Fox, I see you.
They did that, and then Deadpool showed up.
Yeah.
All right, so that'll about do it on this week's podcast. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter at BCW Tiger Fan.
And at The Mets Theory.
And thank you very much, and we will talk to you again next week.